Hello, I'm Jeremy Rivera, your unscripted podcast host. I'm here with Alyssa Evans, who is now on the spotlight. Here is a soapbox. Stand on it and tell America, tell the audience what your passion is and what you think their passion should be.
That I would say that my passion is probably it's continuous improvement. I would say that that's something that I'm always trying. I just always trying to improve and learn and educate myself and just take that information to just build a better life. That's more, wholesome and simple. Yeah, so currently I have my own company and I run my own business. I have clients. So it's a strategy company, but then there's also a large content creation to it. So we focus on their growth goals. So I'm really a growth strategist for different companies to help them build. So we meet either like weekly, bi-weekly, monthly, depending on the type of client that I have. Really focus on one, certain goals that they have, and then I have to come up with a strategy. So yeah, I have my own company right now, and it's been great. The job market's really tough, so it wasn't out of my own choice. It was because I got laid off from a marketing job, and I was just savvy enough, I guess. I went to survival mode, and I just talked to a bunch of people, and luckily word of mouth is a good positive thing too, and I've been very lucky to get.
I've also had that experience of, being pushed back into entrepreneurship again and again. I've worked within an agency, outside of agency, back and forth a few times. I think what you said about working with different teams is interesting. Can you explore a little bit more about how that process of collaboration can bring additional value or be easier on the end business or bring more success out of your campaigns?
Yeah, I think a lot of people stay segmented, and that's kind of very much, I don't want to say this is really the corporate mindset, but you kind of stay in your lanes, and since I have been on my own and pushed into entrepreneurship, then for me, I'm just like, okay, well, what do they think about this idea? What do they think about that idea? Because I feel like every time we talk, we always get something new. And so the person in charge of product will always know kind of like the limitations and their capabilities, what could happen now, what might happen like 6 months from now, and what's like, we're going to need a lot more time and resources. So I think it's really helpful to know, because I could have these wild, crazy ideas and then they're like, that's not going to happen. Or I can have a wild and crazy idea and it's like not that much work. And we're like, okay, that adds a competitive edge to us. So and then the sales team is like, okay, well, how do I communicate this? And then I think that's caused a lot of it's cut down a lot of the frustration, because I think everyone feels supportive in the building way and it's more proactive than reactive. And then I've just seen a lot quicker results with that. So I think it's really valuable and just like finding out what's working and what's not. And then it's kind of just putting the onus. It feels just more like collaboration instead of being told what to do. So, and everyone's having their say in it. So yeah, I think it just makes it more successful.
What are some of the main friction spots that you like to smooth out in the first month or two of a new contract? Like, you're coming on board, what are those problem areas that you're like, I know this is going to be a problem. It's been a problem every single time. So let's put out the fires before they burn down the house.
Yeah, the first month, I really just focus on auditing. And I feel like there's different archetypes of people when it comes to marketing. Some people like just hate social media. They think marketing's a waste of money. They just know they have to do it. And then there's some people that like want these wild and, you know, that need, that want to do something and they're just more hesitant. They want somebody else to do it first. And then there's people like, yeah, let's just try all the things. So I think it definitely takes different archetypes. You really have to understand, I guess, that a person's comfort level and what they are comfortable with, and also audit the whole process. And then you really need to find out what matters most to them. Like, do you want to book more demos? Are you trying to get more like membership signups? Are you trying to increase like this audience segment that you have never really tapped into before? Once you really figure out what their alignment is, then you can kind of, you can audit to see what's worked and what hasn't worked. And then you can really just focus on the next steps. And it's definitely, I feel like it's definitely baby steps to earn that like trust with somebody. You're like, okay, we did this and then this happened. And this is exactly what, you know, was promised or we discussed. And then also being very honest about, you know, what may not work. Like, we are testing this to see the data that comes out of it. And once we understand that data, then we can optimize. So I think it's really about setting expectations, and auditing is really important.
Done a few interviews with SEOs who have fallen into working with a specific vertical or niche. Like one guy, you know, he works with home service businesses, you know, contractors building sunrooms. Another guy who just like works with transportation type companies and, you know, national deliverers of manufacturers delivering concrete walls and things like that. Is there a niche that you've either accidentally or intentionally fallen into, or does it continue to be across the spectrum?
Yeah, it's mostly like either fintech or real estate tech that are SaaS companies. So I always work with SaaS companies pretty much, and some cybersecurity, but it's always been either financial software or it's been a real estate software. So it's kind of given me different edges, but a lot of it's like investors that are looking to get people into their syndications and trying to group raise money for these investment properties, or, you know, even like ATM machines is a huge investing opportunity, or storage units are a big opportunity. So I've helped them translate these offers and these big offers to their audience. So yeah, I've kind of just always been in that world. I was wanting to go into health and wellness, and then I just kind of ended up here, and now I've just been doing this for a long time and I really like it as well. So it's fun.
My own experience with SaaS in-house for Raven Tools, which is a big competitor to Moz, you know, over a decade ago. And I always felt like doing marketing for them, doing SEO for them, was a lot like trying to steer an elephant with six other people on its back.
Yeah.
And you can go only one way, and one person can really, like, if you're all shouting different commands, it's going to keep going in a direction.
Yeah.
But if you don't collaborate together, then you can go stomping through some really rough patches.
Yes.
Would you agree that's a good analogy?
That's definitely a great analogy, yes. It's a lot of people don't understand it. And that's okay. I feel like, you know, there's kind of these memes that come out with marketers of like 50% of your job as a marketer is explaining what you're doing with your job and justifying it. And I think I just kind of understand where everybody's coming from. Like, I had somebody that I did a website rebrand for somebody, and they have this very sophisticated product and they're very leading, but their website just did not communicate that. So I made it very tech focused, and the product team was like, this is terrible. This is the worst website I've ever seen. And everyone's like, no, I think it's cool. Like, I really like it. And I really liked it. But also, like, that person's like, you know, they have a product background. So they're thinking about all the capabilities, all the features that this offers, all of their different like nuances that they have worked very, very hard on. And they should be, you know, maybe I'm frustrated, or they have every right to like want to be able to showcase that. But that's not necessarily what converts a website. You know, everything needs to be very simple, very scannable, very direct CTA so that people get a really big snapshot. Because if somebody's on the website for 30 seconds max, which is kind of normal, if unless they're truly engaging, if they're not getting them real quick, then they're going to bounce. So I do believe, like, I totally understand where that person was coming from. And so we were able to weave some waves through like blog posts and just like different footer pages to have more information on product. But it's not what converts. And, you know, to this, like, they've doubled their website traffic in the past 6 months. So it's like, I know it's working. So, yeah, like everyone will have an opinion, but, and they are valid in their world, but you also have to, there's so many moving parts that you have to just to kind of stand your ground, and then the data will come later. And then you could just be like, see, like, here it is. I knew what I was doing.
It can be difficult working with SaaS because you have a pace of innovation. You talk to you do real estate. Real estate is going to stay the same. You know, the process is like 90% the same. Maybe some of the small details in the software might change over time, but mm-hmm. largely house, sells, buyer. Mm-hmm. But with a SaaS, you have a moving target of this set of features that is, you know, the promises either return of time to the purchaser of that platform, or ease of use, or enabling their business to do more, or, you know, reducing their costs or overhead. But what you're offering, if your SaaS does not change its features over time, it will die.
Mm-hmm.
So there's kind of a release process / marketing / satisfaction cycle that underlies SaaS, which is very different from, you know, somebody who's, you know, they're building sunrooms. They're going to build the same sunroom style. You know, maybe it's going to change a small bit, but for a large part of their business, they're just going to repeat the same thing with different people. But the product on a SaaS that you have to deliver is constantly moving. How do you best grab that and use that to your advantage instead of, you know, rolling the boulder instead of getting the boulder rolled over you?
Yeah, that's a really good question. But there's so many moving parts, and a lot of, like, every product right now has to have like a tech or an AI aspect of it. And every product needs, you know, some sort of leading, we're the first to do this. And the consumer levels, they're moving at a snail's pace compared to product. And they're not, I guess, they're not as active in what it is. Sorry. But okay. So, I think it's really just like, one, you need a change log. You need to make sure that you're putting all the changes that you have on your website. You're keeping your consumer updated. Sorry, can you hear her? I know. Okay.
It's okay.
Okay. I was just with my husband. But that was really important. And then also for product, you really need to communicate what it is and the action that it's going to take up with somebody's time. So you really need to communicate what is the problem that they are solving so that it is completely resolved, and that they're capturing that very, very quickly. So for me, I've started to add like video overviews of just what is happening in their product on their homepage, just on the hero image. So like immediately they can see how they could use the product, and then having the different workflows underneath it and making it a very graphic experience, and then adding the SEO and the keywords and making things very scannable for people. And then just, yeah, communicating with them. I think it's really cool on the product side, especially for like real estate or something, because real estate is pretty much staying the same and there's a lot of companies. But if you give your opinion, then these people can make the changes. And that's what makes these really loyal consumers, because they're actively asking for like, can you make the messaging center better? Can you make more workflows? Can you make more automations? And you're able to work with that in a live time and get resolve that issue. So that just makes them more loyal, because the customer has a voice that they necessarily wouldn't have for larger corporation. So, you know, it's really like that's also really helpful on the product side because you're not just guessing what they want. They're telling you what they want and then you're able to build around it. So I think it's great. I think it starts community and starts like conversations with your customers. So it's really helpful.
I agree. I think, you know, that the having a feedback loop to your community that you're reaching out to is going to continue to grow to be a more important process in marketing because we are going to, I mean, we've already, you know, over time, we've lost some of the fidelity of our data, right? Of like gauging, you know, externally, you know, first search volume, you know, isn't as clear of a signal towards intent as it once was. And now we have AI tools that are coming in and muddying the waters and giving very little information back as far as the actual intent of the end audience. So I think having an internal process where you're able to get feedback from your customers, whether they're current customers or potential customers, so that you actually build something that's going to continue to solve the problem, actually, you know, be the grease for the find the squeak. As my friend Matt Brooks of SEOteric says, find the squeak, be the grease, you know, like figure out what that problem is so that, you know, you can solve it. What are some of those feedback solutions that you've tried out and their upsides and downsides?
I think talking to your customers is really important. I think what I've seen that works well with some brands is that they just kind of have like their, I don't want to say like top performers, but like their account manager like really gets along or just like really has open communication with some of their customers. And so some people you're just like closer because maybe they share more or they're just more open, and that always like starts a conversation. And so I think if you kind of have those like star players of like who your like MVP customers are, and just getting that feedback loop is really helpful. You know, I've kind of seen it like burn in like either like a webinar or you know, it could be like if it's like a Slack or Reddit community, I would say that's, you know, not the best way to go about it. I think asking in an email is great. Just doing like a certain poll, like what product, or email back, you know, what you think. So I've seen stuff like that that's worked really well. And then there's this one company. It's actually an SEO, a brand that helps with SEO. It's called Searchable. And they have a Slack community that is for their customers. And so if there is like a tech problem or if they're having like a product issue, then like the person on the product team will literally like message you on Slack and get back to you. And so I thought that's really cool because they're building in public. They launched in November. I've been in this Slack group and it's been very like hands-on, and now you just kind of feel like part of the company. Like people will give feedback and then it's like worked really well. So I think that they're doing it great, but I think growing in public is kind of where people need to go because there's so many options out there. It's so easy to switch that I think if you really start to talk to your customer, like they're building the product with you, I think you will just be much more successful.
Love that. Yeah, I can see, you know, there's upsides and downsides to that level of transparency. If you don't have the bandwidth to reply quickly to problems or have people who are tied into that, that could quickly go sideways. But I could also see the benefit of, you know, having those faster communication channels. But I would say under that, definitely, you know, interaction with your sales/customer support. Like if you've got one-to-one management, like as the marketer, talking to those people that are in those accounts to figure out, okay, what are their concerns? Not always promising necessarily to fix them, but understanding, you know, the end client through the filter of, you know, those account managers, if that's the model, or handholders or community, because community, it can become its own marketing channel, can it? You know, like the people that interact and receive something positive through that community experience, well, that's just word of mouth 2.0, right?
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Sorry. Ah, yes.
So what are the things that you're concerned about in marketing and SEO, in the digital marketing space over the next year? What are your big warning signs that are flashing that you see on the horizon?
Yeah, it's a big one. I think there's auto blogging and anything that is like auto, like ChatGPT generated, is not working with SEO. And I think that's been a very common thread, I would say, like the past 8 months, that a lot of people are trying to start fixing their website from these auto generated AI content that's not helping them. It's not getting the point across. And I think there's just too much, like it's copy and paste almost everywhere. So people are really looking for things that are more creative. I think blogging is going to take a huge, I've noticed a significant change in how much blogging has increased just organic traffic by making it more searchable with these GEOs. So making sure that when you are blogging and blogging consistently, like it's in the past, like they're looking if they have new content in the past 3 months. So if you have old content, that needs to be updated. Like it is dead. It's not being crawled. You need to update anything from the past. And anything that is new, I think it needs to be formatted in the way that these ChatGPTs and other LLMs are formatting their research. So you are making yourself more crawlable. So it's not necessarily if you're being found on Google, it's if you're being found on these LLMs. And so making sure that you show up in the AI summary is very different than showing like ranking one on Google now. And that's still a top one because people are asking these long tail keywords. They're asking ChatGPT long questions. And so you can't just do one or two words anymore. You have to do these phrases that people are looking for. And then it may not be like the type of questions that you're thinking. So you need to make sure that you're looking in all of these areas and facets so you can lead them on their, I call it like a content ladder. You want to make sure there's always like a base. What's their initial question? And then where that's flowing up. So then you want to make sure that you're found at that very base level and working their way up. So they, as they get more information and it's more complicated, and then they ask more questions, and then you're also showing up on that next level. So it needs to really be very searchable on all ends. So, and I've noticed that for this, we found a niche market with one of my clients, and it's a very different segment that they have ever used in their past. They haven't really thought about using their product for it. And in the past couple of months, they now have like 6 new clients because in this like new niche that they never had before. And it's because of blogging and organic traffic and how we're finding them and then reframing that product to work for other niches or other segments. So it's been really cool to see it work, honestly.
Yeah.
Like we just keep getting demos. I'm like, that's awesome. I was like, I always say it's like they're throwing spaghetti at the wall. I'm like, you're hoping it works. And sometimes it really does. And so it's pretty cool.
I think it's interesting, the more that it changes, the more that it stays the same in certain ways, because my conversations, 6 months to a year ago with other SEOs were really concerned about how much of, Garrett Sussman, he put it, how much of your lunch GPT and AI overviews, how much is Google eating of your lunch? Which means, because the stack used to be 3 or 4 years ago, the golden age of Google from 2010 to 2020 was you create a whole ton of top of funnel content. And then you hope that trickles down further to your bottom funnel content, if you ever think to actually do it. But you drive so much traffic through that top of funnel. But now we have people who have a tool that is 80% just helping them filter through all the stuff that people put out there in their top of funnel. There was a concern of, well, then I don't have any incentive to actually do that anymore and create that level of content or that type of content. But what I've kind of seen is a phenomenon close to what you're saying, which is it's not that publishing content is bad or has become bad. It's that you don't, if you're a plumber, you don't have to write the 500th article on how to stop a leaky faucet from leaking.
Yes, exactly.
You need a better, more comprehensive, further down, okay, why is just thinking about the faucet leaking a faulty approach? We're going to redo your whole plumbing system to save you money, you know, or getting deeper than just the surfacey, because we don't need, you know, 5 million articles from every plumber in the world solving the problem of how to solve a leaky faucet. Google's going to choose, you know, 10 articles and show them at the top. GPT is going to choose, apparently, a different 3 every single time. The repeatability factor of showing up in ChatGPT is wild, because I think it was Rand Fishkin. He just did a study and had 100 different people do the same query a number of times to see what how the results shifted and changed. And it's wild. It's very like a very small repeat number of results coming back up. Like if you're in that selection, you'll come up, but it will change. Like if you repeat that search again and again, it will give you different results each time. And then everybody starts with a different result and gets different results over time within that lexus of content that will appear, you know? So that kind of randomness, it's counter to SEO's desire to fulfill CEO's desire for sustainable data, right? CEOs want to know what their market potential looks like. And so they want tools that measure that. So that's why we have, you know, 250 people creating the same AI visibility tool. But we can't predict that the way that we could reliably predict or rely on, you know, Google search volume information from their API based off of their ads on those, because the LLMs are, they're just making stuff up again and again. And it's, there's a much lower repeatability factor that you can rely on. So maybe you'll show up one time out of X number. Is that visibility or not? Does that satisfy the itch, or does, or is it more about, okay, I just need to know if I show up at all? Do I have enough clout to appear? Am I relevant enough? And then I can focus on fleshing out those, the answers to those questions at the bottom of the funnel more often than at the top. Because, you know, GPT has its training data. You know, talking with Jason Bernard of Caligib, he's kind of defined the process of, hey, they have a training data set. You need to supply the stuff that's outside of the training data set that's showing up in rankings that they go and they're, if they don't have the answer, they're going to Google it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like at the end of the day, a large part of the research that they're doing, it's a wrapper for Google results or Bing's index.
I know. Oh, yeah. Yes, I agree. Yeah. I mean, that's very true. Like, everything's, it's, I mean, I mean, that's the thing. Like, we're still figuring it all out. And that's the thing. Like, nobody really knows, and everything's different for everybody. So it's kind of like, you see what is kind of driving traffic and hoping that, maybe it's part of their personal algorithm too, and then how they interact with it. We just don't really know. I think, yeah, it just kind of comes back to creating, I guess, that good content and not just like posting content just because it's like National Donut Day or something, you know, like making sure that you're actually just giving something of value to connect with people. But yeah, I think it's, I don't really know what in the next like 6 months what things are going to be like. So you kind of just have to see what's working now and just build something like really good, and don't copy and paste. Always add your own insights, your own research, your own social proof into everything that you're doing. So
I think Rand Fishkin himself is a fantastic example with Spark Toro. Like, he doesn't focus on SEO. He does unique, relevant research and then releases that, and through that creates you know, his own marketing cycle around that. I think a lot of SEOs, you know, in the past decade had been behind the ball and just looking for existing trends to exploit versus focusing on demand generation and what, you know, like if you're looking at the search volume for a niche and that defines how your market that you can reach, you're only doing half of the work because perhaps there are people that are just not aware that there is that solution. And if they were made aware through other channels, other mediums, then the search volume would necessarily increase.
Yeah. Yeah. It's true. It's very true. Yeah. Oh, it's always changing, you know? It's just, you got to keep up with it. It's fun, though. It's like a game. You're just constantly in a game.
When it comes to link building and authority, what do you think that looks like? As you know, right now it's very popular and very easy just to, you know, get into those listicles to show up in ChatGPT searches. Mm-hmm. Do you think that's going to stay the same, or do you think that window of opportunity is closed or closing? Or is it always going to, you know, is that factor forever change? Because, you know, for the last 25 years of SEO, a huge portion of effort has always gone into link building because it was hard, because it was supposed to be hard, because it's getting, you know, validated from another source. But then we got wrapped up in all this lingo, DR, DA, you know, trying to explain to a CEO the value of a backlink. I was just talking to another SEO friend of mine, Michael McDougald, of, I don't even use the phrase link building anymore. I just say you need to show up in these places. Mm-hmm. So you show up in ChatGPT. And I just justified our entire link building budget. And I have the goal of, you know, I can now use that as a mandate to go and do the link building that I always wanted to do, but I never got the budget. But now they're super concerned about showing up in GPT. I can do a whole bunch more offsite.
Yeah. No, that's so great. Yeah. And I think that's why I think that community and like just networking is also going to really grow, because people are going to realize like it's not like a every person for themselves. But, like, you have to find those people that are your non-competitors in your space and then like affiliate with them and find ways for you to cross promote one another or see how you can integrate with one another. Or, you know, even if there's like a referral program and they get a certain percent and you get a kickback, like that builds authority too. And that's why I think that people are going to want more from their brand. So you really need like a voice of the company. I think podcasts are a great way to build authority. Like you're getting ranked usually on YouTube, on you have social, and you have usually a website or blog that it's going to. So that's going to be a great referring links for you. And then the more that you do and you talk about these certain subjects or niches, you're just going to become a lot more crawlable with it. So really just like reaching out and connecting with other people for more partnership based opportunities, I think is going to be very, very helpful. So, and I've noticed that more brands are reaching out to like my specific clients and being like, hey, can you update your blog and we'll like, you scratch your back, or like if you scratch our back, we'll scratch yours and we'll put you in this blog post. And if you change your ranked list to this, and it's starting to be a lot more common now that people are kind of going back and forth with people to just guest blog and share so that they can get more authority to be searched better.
Brilliant. Any final thoughts as we wrap up? Make sure to mention where people can find you if you're on a particular social network or have a site or resource that you want them to check out. Go ahead and shout out.
Awesome. Yes, I have all of my information is at growyourstrategy.co. I'm on every single social media. It is Grow Your Strategy. So I definitely am focused on SEO and just personal growth. But yes, and so I am also launching a small membership that will be like $9 a month for people that are building or want some help with their marketing. And it's going to be a huge community of people that will be able to do affiliate marketing with each other and these small companies, find like-minded people. And also we're going to get on a group coaching call every month so that we can just share ideas and think tank and brainstorm one another, so, and help each other out. So, yep. Very exciting. My name is Alyssa Evans too. So growyourstrategy.co.
Fantastic. Thanks so much for your time, Alyssa.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Jeremy. It was so fun.